This is the April 14th, 2020 hearings of the Clark County Board of Equalization. The hearing before us involves property 718-97005. It's case number 753. Board members present today are by teleconference are Lisa Bodner, John Marks, and Chairman Daniel Weaver. There is no one on the call from the assessor's office, but we do have Bob Bloom and Stacy Bloom on the line for the appellant. Bob and Stacy, if you would please raise your right hands to be sworn in.
You're breaking a lot, Michelle.
Yeah, on my end as well.
Could you hear my thing okay enough?
Yeah, I could tell what you were saying.
Okay.
Okay,
I swear or affirm the testimony you give in this hearing will be the truth under penalty for perjury.
Yes. Hang on. My husband just walked away for a second. Do you swear? Say, raise your hand and say yes.
Oh, I do. Swear to tell the whole truth, nothing but the truth.
Okay. I got it.
Thank you. All right, just to let you know or remind you that we're independent from the assessor's office. We're here to hear testimony and make a decision on the value of your property as of January 1st, 2019. Keep in mind, the assessor has the presumption of correctness. You have to overcome that to prevail. Within 30 days after this hearing, you'll get a written response from this board as the outcome. You have 30 days from that point to appeal to the state. The assessor has that same 30 days to appeal if he doesn't like our decision. And we may be a little late because of the current circumstances, but regardless, you'll still have 30 days after you receive our letter to appeal to the state. So unless you have questions, I'm going to turn it over to you.
All right. I don't have any questions, so I guess I will keep talking. So I'm sure you've seen in our submittal via written testimony that our primary concern associated with the valuation of this property is that the property does require such significant added cost to develop. And where that all started was that the geotechnical engineers, in reviewing it and doing their testing on site, realized that there is 12 to 13 feet of existing loose unconsolidated fill on the property with 2 to 5 feet of potentially liquefiable soil. So obviously that's a concern to build your house on. And as a result, our geotechnical engineer, earth engineers, and our structural engineer, Ricardo Pitt, determined that we would need to install 58 driven steel piles and 4 tieback anchors, as well as a 3-foot by 3-foot steel reinforced concrete grade beams, tying them all together. And these elements really exceeded my expectations on what it might cost to build a foundation for the home that we want to build for our retirement house. So I had submitted an Exhibit B that was an estimate from a piling company, and that seems to be the most favorable estimate, so it looks like they're the ones that we're going to go with, and the total cost there was estimated at $138,000. But what's important to note is that that's simply the minimum cost associated with the work. We know that there are very large boulders in the underlying fill, and that when we hit them, the added cost of having to redesign and drive new piles, which is typically the way you have to resolve that, is of course going to be our cost to bear. So we won't really know the true cost of just those steel piles and anchors until we're done. And on top of that, every day that they're out there, we have to pay the geotechnical engineer $1,000 per day to be providing oversight and inspection on that. So it's a pretty spendy requirement. Meanwhile, I don't have an estimate for the 3-foot by 3-foot steel reinforced concrete grade beams, but those grade beams have, I believe it was 14 number 6 rebar, which is very large rebar that you wouldn't normally see in a home's foundation. And because it's larger and therefore harder to work with, it's a lot more expensive as well. And so I did an analysis of just the footing the grade beam that was designed as opposed to the original foundation that came with the house when we first procured our house plans. And in looking at that, just the rebar additional cost alone for the horizontal linear rebar was $32,000, and yet the original standard foundation that the typical anybody else would build that came with the original house plan would have only been $1,720 was what I came up with. And so just the rebar alone for my concrete grade beam is $30,000 more than, but what that also, again, doesn't account for is all the vertical rebar that isn't in there. I just did a rough comparison, one actually to also give me an idea of how much this is going to cost once I get an estimate from the concrete guys. But there's vertical rebar in the grade beam and in the stem wall, and so there's certainly additional costs beyond that. Meanwhile, I also just, of course, compared the concrete and the original foundation design that came versus what we now have as what we have to build. And the bottom line is that the original quantity of the original footing design, the final footing design is 4.5 times the original quantity of concrete. So again, you're looking at 4.5 times the standard concrete amount. And that doesn't even include the stem wall quantities yet. And yet our stem wall has to be even taller than the original design to raise our house above the base flood elevation and install flood vents. There are also, of course, other associated ancillary costs, like, you know, the structural and geotechnical design associated with that foundation, the construction inspection, which I mentioned the piece about the geotechnical engineer that's got to monitor it, and then there's testing costs as well. So it's really expensive. I'm guessing it's all told, will probably easily be $200,000 more than what a regular foundation would have cost us. Now, I'm not really going to know till we actually get the whole thing built. You know, we've got our permits, and so we're reaching out to contractors, and it's been hard enough just to try and figure out which excavator to go with, much less everything else involved. So, very expensive. Meanwhile, I had a few other notes that were simply issues that I felt would make this property less desirable. And in comparing it with the assessment neighborhood, you know, we did get the information that showed which properties were used to assess our value. And as I noted in my previous letter, I was really surprised at the minimal deduction of road noise, because I have a condition where our house directly backs Highway 14 and is so visible that people honk at us as they drive by on Highway 14. And yet you've got the other houses that were in the assessment neighborhood that were used to determine our value that are on these quiet neighborhood streets that don't back to Highway 14. And from my perspective, I cannot imagine any property owner that would want to buy our property if they got that $17,500 deduction as compared to the properties that are on 12th Avenue and Polk Circle. So, hang on, my husband wants to make a statement.
Additionally, on that point, with the new traffic circles installed and the new warning sign saying to slow down, we have the Jake brakes the air brakes then going into effect right in front of our property, too, as people slow down to hit the 25 miles per hour to turn in the circle.
Okay, so then, so the bottom line is I just didn't feel it was accurate to state that our market value is exactly the same as the market value of those on homes on 12th and Polk. Meanwhile, the other issue that I felt was worthy of mentioning was the fact that we have a 24-foot wide ingress-egress utility easement along the entire north side of our property. It reduces the use of our lot by 3,000 square feet, and in my experience, because I deal with property acquisition on projects that I work in construction, if we acquire a parcel that had an easement on it, it's not valued at the same. It's not valued at full fee value, and so that easement, restricts us on being able to utilize the land for our own development. And honestly, if not for it, we could have planted our own large evergreen trees to buffer Highway 14. But once we, have to save all that area for our access and utilities, we just don't have enough real estate left to be planting this nice, dense evergreen tree buffer. And so, and not only that, but we're also required to maintain the asphalt over that easement area, whereas the homes on 12th, if you're looking at that, again, it's a beautiful street with sidewalks, and it's all maintained by the city of Kamloops, whereas, we have to maintain our own access to in front of our house. And then finally, again, I just wanted to mention, of course, that we are the only properties along Avon Avenue that are in the floodway fringe, and this is what requires us to have to elevate our house higher, several feet higher than existing grade, and install flood vents. And again, all of that is additional cost. So that's basically my case. I don't know if you have any questions.
No, I think it's pretty well explained. John and Lisa?
No questions.
I have a question. The size of the house, the design of the house, if that were changed, that would change the cost to develop the land. Would that be correct? I'm not thinking necessarily a lot, but I mean, different house tile or something, would that lower it or change it?
The size of the house, it affects, of course, your foundation, because if I had a small house, then, basically I think what the geotechnical engineer had come up with was that we needed pilings every 15 feet. So obviously if I had a house that was half the size, then I'd have fewer piles, and of course I'd have a lot less cost for the grade beam. And so certainly that plays a role. And matter of fact, that is something that my sister, who owns the property next door, they did recently make the decision to downsize, because they just knew as all these costs were adding up, it became too expensive and they weren't going to be able to build at all. And all because of this foundation. So they did, revised their home and turned it into just a two-bedroom home, which is kind of unfortunate for a waterfront home if that's all you have is a small two-bedroom home.
Okay. That's good for me. I mean, I remember your
sister,
I think, being into the board before, and I looked at all of this stuff and said, wait a minute, we just did this, but...
Yeah, that would have been my sister. Yeah, she came in a few weeks ago. Yeah, and I believe the other house on the side of her, there's only three parcels. I'm sorry, actually, I would have misspoken earlier in that when I said we were the only homes in the floodway fringe, I meant the three parcels. My parcel, which is 110 South A, my sister's, sorry, I just said that wrong, 10 1010 South A. My sister is 1060 South A. And I think that David and Carolyn Sims are, I think their address is 1120 South A. Those three homes are all technically don't have, even though our address is A, our driveways all access this private easement that's on our property to give us access. We're no longer fronting A Avenue right of way. We're just fronting Highway 14.
Okay. I'm good with it, I believe.
Okay, I've got it.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you so much for
your... Hear from us hopefully within 30 days.
Okay, thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye.
Close the hearing. Bye.
This is a continuation of the April 14th, 2020 hearings of the Clark County Board of Equalization. The hearing before us involves property 227-633-010 for case 767. Board members present by teleconference today are Lisa Bodner, John Marks, and Chairman Daniel Weaver. There is no one on the call from the assessor's office, but we do have Craig Klinkhammer on the line for the appellant. Craig, if you would please raise your right hand to be sworn in.
Yes.
Do you swear or affirm the testimony you give in this hearing be the truth under penalty for perjury?
I do.
Just to remind you or let you know that we're independent from the assessor's office. We're here to hear testimony, make a decision on the value of your property as of January 1st, 2019. Keep in mind the assessor has a presumption of correctness. You have to overcome that to prevail. Within 30 days after this hearing, you get a written response from this board as to the outcome. You have 30 days from that point to appeal to the state. The assessor has that same 30 days to appeal if he doesn't like our decision. And keep in mind, under these unusual circumstances, we may be a little late on 30 days, but you'll still have 30 days to appeal after that. So if you have any, unless you have any questions, I'm going to turn it over to you and let you further explain your appeal.
No questions.
Okay, so go ahead and explain your appeal.
Absolutely. Well, you know, first and foremost, thanks for taking the time today. Obviously, I would like to be there in person, but we're all doing our job to keep this virus from spreading. This is my second time, actually, meeting with the board. I also did this in 2018. Long-time resident here in Clark County. The property in discussion today was my parents'. I took it over for them about 10-12 years ago, as they could not manage it. And I think that's really what leads me here today is things that I see in this neighborhood, appraisals I have gotten all throughout the refinancing of this property over the last 15 or so years, never have reached I think the levels of assessment that we see. And even when I look at the sales comparatives, this structure, I love the land. I love where it is. There's so many things that are out of code. There's many things that are 25 years old that just need to be replaced. And even looking at the tax lot here, the 013 or 0013, the tax area, the valuation of this home is putting me at the top of the stack. I think $940,000 was the highest one. Those are homes built, within the last 10 years, not the last 25 years. I challenge to, the value of the home and feel that there's just so much improvements that need to be made in order to get it to that area. So that's generally, I can answer any questions. I sent some pictures along of just, like I said, issues with kitchen cabinets, issues with, I love my parents dearly. I think they made some questionable decisions with brown concrete and things that were going on in 1996. And there's just no way I think that the structure's worth $905,000. So my request, as I filled out, was I believe the land is definitely the crown jewel here, but I think the structure, is probably worth, all the structures here are probably worth $500,000. And so I don't want to be piggish and say this property is worthless, because I do love it here, but I believe 800 or 795, I think is what I put is more reasonable based on all the comparisons that I've seen on your lists and in my neighborhood and in this area. And that's it for me.
Okay, any questions, John and Lisa?
No, I don't have.
I think I have the picture. Did the assessor send you a list of properties, or were these last year's properties that this list?
This list is used for the 2019 assessment. There was an assessor that sent me a list, but I also found the list online, and I marked up a couple of properties that we were looking at to compare.
Yep, that's it. Okay, I've got it.
Okay.
Yep.
No further questions. You're all done.
All righty. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Bye.
This is a continuation of the April 14th, 2020 hearings of the Clark County Board of Equalization. The hearing before us involves property 144750000. It's case number 768. Board members present today by teleconference are Lisa Bodner, John Marks, and Chairman Daniel Weaver. There's no one on the call from the assessor's office, but we do have Matt Selling as a representative for the appellant. Matt, if you would please raise your right hand to be sworn in.
Do you swear or affirm the testimony given in this hearing will be the truth under penalty of perjury?
Yes, I do.
Thank you. Just to let you know, we're independent from the assessor's office. We're here to hear testimony and make a decision on the value of your property as of January 1st, 2019. Keep in mind, the assessor has a presumption of correctness. You have to overcome that to prevail. Within 30 days after this hearing, you get a written response from this board as the outcome. You have 30 days from that point to appeal to the state. The assessor has that same 30 days to appeal if he doesn't like our decision. And please keep in mind, during these unusual circumstances, we may be later than 30 days, but you'll still have 30 days from that point to appeal to the state. So unless you have questions, I'm going to turn it over to you and let you further explain your appeal.
Understood. Thank you very much. Can everyone hear me okay before we go any further?
Yeah.
Okay, great. So we did submit some evidence on this property. There was if you include the appeal forms, it was about 13 pages. So if you have that in front of you, I'm going to go ahead and run through that.
Yes, we do.
Okay, great. So page 5 is our cover page. That includes some information about the subject property, including the assessor's actual value this year, which is $1,869,100, and our opinion of value for the subject property is $1,240,000. Page 2 there is some subject property, some aerial photos of the subject. So this property is a lumber yard. It is leased. We represent the tenant. The tenant here is ProBuild. And the larger parent company there is Builders First Source, who is our client. So what ProBuild and Builders First Source does, if you're not familiar, they're a lumber yard. So they kind of do some home goods supplies for builders, for residential homes. Okay, page 3 is some more summary of the information for our subject property. The site is roughly 3.5 acres. The net leasable area, which we call building square foot, is 20,140 square feet. It was built in 1974, so it's an older property, as you can see from the photos. Of course, it's 100% occupied at the moment by our client. And one thing I'd like to address about that net leasable area or the square footage of 20,000, if you were to go back to the aerial of the subject property, you'll see there are buildings numbered 1 and building number 2. Number 2 is actually not included in that calculation because that's not an enclosed building. It's open on one side so they can store wood and material from getting exposed to the weather. So building 1 is the 20,000 square foot warehouse that we're including in that net leasable area. So it is open on the east side there. You can see some material stacked on the east side. Is that what your question was?
Is it one that has the 2 on top of it?
Correct, yeah. Number 2 is an open-ended, they call them T-sheds because, there's a structural beam in the middle and then a roof, but there's really no walls around the outside. It's just a canopy.
So you're saying that's not in the 20,000 square feet. 20,000 square feet is just building 1.
Right, which is the metal warehouse pictures below there, which is building 1, yeah. But, they lease the whole property. They lease all the land. So when I'm going to go to my income approach, which is the next page in our package here, the income approach is using per square foot breakouts, and I was just mentioning that the per square foot breakouts are just based on building 1. However, the rent that they pay, of course, is for the entire site, the whole 3.5 acres and all the improvements on it. So that's our pro forma income analysis is the next page there. Again, there's some more subject information for your reference in the top half. I'm going to skip to the bottom half of that page. Excuse me one second. So the income portion, our potential base rent for this property is $90,026, which comes out to $447 per square foot. And this is the actual rent that our client pays for this property. It was negotiated. They've been leasing this property for several years. However, this new rent was negotiated approximately 7 to 8 years ago in a third amendment, which is what I've attached here today. So the third amendment is the following pages of this package. So that's where our rent comes from. We do consider some market vacancy of just 5%, which is the minimum amount we consider. going through events like our country and our world going through right now is reason for why we do consider some vacancy. Anything can happen to the property, even though it has been consistently occupied for the last 20 or so years. Expenses, we're doing 6%, and that's a low figure, and it's because this is a triple net lease. So our client pays majority of the expenses and utilities. However, there are some that are passed through to the owner. So that's what that 6% expense number is there. So after taking our potential base rent with some market vacancy and market expenses, we're getting a net operating income of $80,393. And we're using a market cap rate of 6.5%, which we think is conservative for this type of property and for this age of property. And that gets us to our indicated value today of $1,240,000. And we've primarily done the income approach. We consider the cost approach, but it's such an old building that, the depreciation is kind of subject to, however you want to do the depreciation. There's no real perfect math to it, so that's why we just did the income approach here. And then we've provided the third amendment for the lease following.
Okay, you didn't do any market comparison with other like properties.
Correct. So doing the market approach for a building like this is really, you know, if you go back and look at the aerial, building one is a market building, but then there's an additional 2.5 acres of land behind it, and it's being used as a lumber yard. There's not a lot of lumber yard sales out there. So, you know, it's tough to find perfect comparables. And if the assessor did provide some market sales, I'd like to review those, but it's really, it's tough to find close comps because this isn't just a traditional warehouse where you can find traditional warehouse sales. It's a unique property. So that's why we don't have any comparable sales there.
And you didn't get a letter from them?
You see, Michelle actually did forward me the assessor's information. So are they making a presentation today, or is it just me?
It's just you.
Okay.
You read this letter where they talk about contract rents and the analysis do not reflect market rents. They assess the data January 2019.
Yes, I'm reading that letter right now.
But we,
you know, I do think
$7,500.
I'm sorry. Go on.
Well, I'm saying that in the Third Amendment, it talks about $7,500 a month as of January 1 of 13. So I have to get back to, is that what the rent was at in 19? Was still $7,500, or have there been any escalation clause?
Well, in paragraph 5, it goes
Exactly, yeah, there were options to extend, and they did extend, so beginning January 1st, 2020. Yeah.
He specifically talked about as of January 19th. We didn't know what the rent was, and I'm just saying, would the rent have been this amount that you mentioned? Because when you look at the escalation clauses, you start with 2020, go forward. He's saying, well, we don't know what the rent was for January 1 of 19. That's what I'm asking.
Well, it says right there.
Right, so the escalation.
December 1st, 19.
Right, the escalations occur every 5 years. So that's what the options are.
Okay, so does that mean that it would have been escalated in 2018?
No, their rent was the $7,500 per month in 2018.
Okay, that's what I just wanted to clarify that. He had a point. Saying that in his letter that we didn't know what the rent was as of January 1, 2019, but it was $7,500.
I got you. Okay, so yeah, the issue is we're representing the tenant who pays the taxes in the triple net lease, so we can only provide the lease copy to you. We don't have the rent roll or the actual income statement from the owner. But given this is a single tenant property, the lease is, you know, really the majority of the information.
Okay. Thank you.
Let me, it looks to me like basically the major difference between your analysis and their analysis is that they value the excess land separately from the main building. And that accounts for the bulk of the difference between your two values. And your contention is, that entire property is integral to the lumber yard operation. So it's really the entire property that you're valuing, not just the building and, you know, warehouse location.
Correct. So, kind of what I talked about with why we didn't provide any sales comps is because there's no perfect comp for this type of property. So what the assessor is doing is they're looking at similar warehouses to building one. They're looking at similar lease rates to building one. And then they're adding on that additional land in the back, where my approach, we're looking at the actual rent that's being paid for the entire property. So because they're, you know, leasing the entire property, we don't have to do an excess land calculation. That's already factored into their lease. So, you know, if I were to look at market comps, and if I derived my rent from other similar warehouses, then I would have included excess land because those warehouses likely wouldn't have had excess land on them. Did that make sense?
Yeah. No, I understand. I mean, you're valuing an entire lumber yard operation, and he's valuing, or they're valuing a warehouse operation as opposed to a whole lumber yard operation.
Correct. They're, that's kind of the thing with mass appraisal. You kind of have to have a set warehouse rent, and then if there is excess land, you make that adjustment. I have the benefit of having the tenant's information and the lease and the rent. So I did it a different approach based on the actual information.
Take a look at their sale number 5, which is a lumber yard. Is that a lumber yard operation?
It looks like it was, yeah. Par Lumber Co. It was in Vancouver, sold on April 22nd, 2019.
Yeah.
There's no notes on the sale. Let's see if it was had any flags in CoStar. Yeah, that does look like a comparable property, quite frankly. It's a lot newer. It was built in 2003 compared to our 1973, I think it was. So the building size looks to be about the same. Has a little bit less land.
The only difference in that one is the acreage is only 1.29 acres.
Oh, land area square feet right there, yeah, 56,000 square feet.
So
yeah, let's look. 1.2 acres. Okay. All right. I think I have it. Yep, me too.
Okay. I'm good with it, please.
Okay, well, thank you so much for your time.
Okay, thank you.
All right, take care.
Close the hearing.
This is a continuation of the April 14th, 2020 hearings of the Clark County Board of Equalization. The hearing before us involves property 366000 for appeal 773. Board members present by teleconference today are Lisa Bodner, John Marks, and Chairman Daniel Weaver. There's no one on the call from the assessor's office, but we do have both Jennifer and Jason Henderson on the line for the appellant. If you would both raise your right hands to be sworn in.
Yes. Do you swear or affirm the testimony you give in this hearing be the truth under penalty for perjury?
Yes.
Did I hear two voices?
Yes.
Yes.
Just to let you know, we're independent from the assessor's office. We're here to hear testimony and make a decision on the value of your property as of January 1st, 2019. Keep in mind, the assessor has a presumption of correctness. You have to overcome that to prevail. Within 30 days after this hearing, you get a written response from this board as the outcome. You have 30 days from that point to appeal to the state. The assessor has that same 30 days to appeal if he doesn't like our decision. And please keep in mind that in these trying circumstances, we may be a little later than 30 days, but regardless, you'll still have 30 days to appeal to the state after you get your response. So unless you have questions, I'm going to turn it over to you and let you further explain your appeal.
No question.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, basically, we
a couple of years ago, we purchased the property for $225,000. I believe the appraisal value at that time was about $260,000. It's on a large, unmanageable lot. I mean, it's a 1,500 square foot home, so it's really not that big. The property, the back half of the property is 28% grade and inaccessible. We don't have any legal access to it. There's no roads or there's no way to actually get to the back half of the property. And the front half is the same slope, but really not usable, hard enough to even mow. But we're in a severe erosion hazard area. There's not a lot we can really do with an area with potential instability. So the house is about the only flat, usable space on the whole property. So when you look at it as a whole package, you know, the house itself, the only 1,500 square feet is not a $400,000. So that's kind of the basis for, you know, where we start when we look at this. But it's also, you know, completely overgrown. Very hard to maintain or even get under control at this time. So that's what that was our appraisal value 2 years ago, purchase price, and size of home is the biggest issues, I would say. And I don't know if you have any questions for us or if you have can see the property or review it, but the when you see the area,
you had some comps in there. Were they in proximity to your home?
The what?
Where are the comparable properties you have listed? Where are they in comparison to your home?
Hold on. Just a second. Angie, do you have any lunch? Let's see.
They're in our general neighborhood.
Yeah.
In our general neighborhood.
A few of them are just moved a half a mile, maybe. So.
We're kind of a unique property in that the slope is so deep, it's hard to find a comparable house. The houses that have the same slope are... they don't necessarily overlook the railroad like we do.
Okay, comparable house size doesn't have a slope lot. Most of them that are around here are in a nice neighborhood with a street and sewage. And, you know, well, we don't. We're going to have to modify the entrance just to get a septic tank truck near a pump septic tank. So we're really at a disadvantage of our location of where we're placed on a lot away from the street as well.
You know, I think you're Jennifer very well, but you're breaking up a lot. I'm only about every fifth word, I think.
I was just saying that the other houses of this size in the neighborhood are on nice, flat, level lots in the neighborhood set on the street, where we're set way off the street on the hillside. So finding anything really comparable in lot is not really achievable. We're the only one that sits in the middle of a lot over the edge of the hill above the train yard. So, but yeah, most of the houses that we've used for comparison are with, I think three of them are right within our neighborhood. So.
You know, I know Columbia doesn't overlook the train yard, and Lincoln doesn't. Does Lincoln overlook the train yard?
No.
No, it's two blocks from us.
And then Hazeldale Way is right off Hazeldale Avenue, right?
So, they're all nice, flat pieces of property in the neighborhood where we are, set off from the street on the side of a hill. So,
it says your house is a day ranch, so it's just 1,500 on one floor. Do you have a basement?
So, yeah, it's 1,000 on the top, 500 usable on the bottom.
500 on the bottom, okay.
Yeah, I believe so.
I don't have any more questions.
Well, is your access to the property from Olive Street then?
Yes, it is.
And the train is, and the slope behind you goes down, and there's some properties back there. Are they on the flat, or are they still on the slope?
There is a flat cut in the slope back there for the lower house below us. But pretty much,
they back up directly to the railroad, is that correct?
Yes. That whole piece of property is against the railroad below us.
I'm just looking at the map. Okay.
Yeah, and there is no easement for us to get to the lower half.
Say again?
There is no easement for us to get access to the lower half of the property.
When you say an easement,
well, there's no there's no public land. There's all privately owned land down there. So there's no way for us to drive physically to the property.
So are you high enough on the hill that if some of the green brush and stuff out there was gone, would you actually be able to see Vancouver Lake, or are you just a little...
We can't see the lake.
You look out more toward Alcoa, that way it gets out across the flatland if you had some of that tree out there, but it doesn't look like a great view.
The way our property faces is more toward the 39th Street overpass they put in there.
Hmm, okay. Okay, I'm good with it, I believe.
Me too.
Okay, I got it. Thank you. You'll hear from us hopefully within 30 days.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye.
Close the hearing.
This is a continuation of the April 14th, 2020 hearings of the Clark County Board of Equalization. The hearing before us involves property 124817092 for case 782. Board members present by teleconference are Lisa Bodner, John Marks, and Chairman Daniel Weaver. There is no one on the call from the assessor's office, but we have Joyce Stovall on the line for the appellant. Joyce, if you would please raise your right hand to be sworn in.
Do you swear or affirm the testimony you give in this hearing be the truth under penalty for perjury?
Yes.
Thank you. Just to let you know, we're independent from the assessor's office. We're here to hear your testimony and make a decision on the value of your property as of January 1st, 2019. Keep in mind the assessor has a presumption of correctness. You have to overcome that to prevail. Within 30 days after this hearing, you get a written response from this board as the outcome. You have 30 days from that point to appeal to the state. The assessor has that same 30 days to appeal if he doesn't like our decision. And please keep in mind, under these trying circumstances, we may be a little later than 30 days, but you'll still have 30 days from that point to appeal to the state.
Okay.
And I'm going to ask you one question. Did you get a copy of a letter from the assessor's office
and they're recommending instead of the 642 that they assessed you at, to a new recommended value of 617,651?
Yes, they did get that.
Okay. And you're still asking for 614,270, correct?
Well, in my letter, I did some calculations, and actually I'm asking for less.
Okay, what is that number?
Okay, that is 601,480.
601,480, okay?
Yeah. And
so
it's
go ahead and tell us why it should be
little,
that number.
Pardon? I didn't hear that.
Go ahead and tell us why it should be that number, 601,480.
Oh, okay, well, it's a little complicated. So during this period of time, leading up to the evaluation 2018, I guess, the market was very slow, and finding comp was there weren't that many. Using sale prices seems to not work very well because the one house on the list that I used, one just a couple of blocks down the street from us, was almost identical in all the specs to our house, and the assessor's office would not use that as a comp because they said it was an outlier. I don't know what outlier means unless it just simply means it's outside their statistical range, and so they didn't want to use it. If you have, and I don't know which information, I put all my information together and I didn't actually make a copy of what I sent in. So it was sale 3 at 3641 Northwest Sierra Drive. It sold in October of 2018 for $547,900. So that was just 2 months before the assessment. Their adjusted sale price, which is usually what happens to the market between the sale and the end of the year, was also $547,900, but they assessed it at $658,600 on January 1st. Some of that doesn't make any sense to me, and when I looked at the comp, I decided that a better way of doing this might be to use statistics. So I looked at the four houses that I used as comp. And I looked at simply the difference between their assessment in 2018 and their assessment in 2019. That's kind of what I put in my letters. I have since made a spreadsheet, which is a little easier to read. But I should say in 2018, or from 2018 to 2019, the land value of all these four houses went up. One of them went up by as much as 33%. The others went up by 17.5%. But the structure value of each of these houses went down. Most of them about 11 to 12% of the structure value. When I look at the change in the assessed value of the house, the whole assessed value and the difference in the assessed value of the structure, I calculated those for all four houses and then took an average. The average change in total assessed value was 3.09% or 3.088%. The negative change in value of the structure of all four houses was 9.9%. So I took those average decline assessments and multiplied them times the assessed value of our house in 2018 to come up with a comparable assessed value for 2019, keeping the value of the land the same. And the numbers are a little different from in my letter. I must have made a math mistake, but the total change in assessed value would result in a value of $604,992 total assessed value. If I applied the structure, the change in just the structure,
it doesn't account for the increase in the land value, it would be $597,968. So I took an average of those and came up with $601,480 as an appropriate assessment for the house for 2019, which represents basically the average decline in value of the house that I used.
Keep in mind that we, in valuing properties, cannot use assessed values, because assessed values could be wrong on all properties. You're contesting the value of your property. Those all may be wrong also.
Whatever is compared
to the market, the law reads that it's the market value at the date of assessment, meaning the fair value of properties that are sold in or about the same time as your assessment date. So assessed values, like I said, can be wrong. They're subject to whatever things that the assessor sees in that particular property and whatever goes into their electronic model that produces a value for that property.
But I would say all of these properties declined in assessed value. I'm not looking at absolute assessed values. I'm looking at simply in percentage decline in assessed value. And they're all very consistent, actually, for the houses that are most comparable to mine. Very consistent drop in assessed value, which means that's their model. I'm not looking at absolute assessed value. I'm looking at their percentage of decline in assessed value.
Well,
does that make sense? I mean, I'm not saying my house should be assessed at a certain value because another house was assessed at the same value. What I'm saying is the assessors assess all the property at a lower rate, and the lower rate is all consistent across all of these houses. Therefore, it should be consistent for my household.
Okay. Their assessed value on your property last year was $690,000.
We must have
adjusted it down to $624,000. Is that correct?
Correct. And before...
So their assessed value last year, and your property declined by $48,000 from last year's their assessment. So their model does show that your value decreased.
Yes, but not at the same percentage rate as the other house.
Well, $48,000 is quite a bit.
But you're looking at absolute numbers, and I'm looking at the percentage. And actually,
$48,000 is about 8%, I think.
Well, then if you take the 624, which was the actual assessed value, and apply 8%, it goes below $600,000.
That was our adjustment last year. Their rise of value this year is 617, which is actually a reduction from last year's value that we set on 6.4. So it still does go down, maybe not the same percentage as some of the others, but it has gone down.
It has gone down, but like I say, the rate of reduction for all of the comps is very consistent, and that's not how much. 624 to 617 doesn't approach the 5-6% that the other houses buy. And I understand that the more valuable a house is, the percentage of decline can be different as you go down the scale. But still, it was not consistent with the other. The decline was not. That was
simply. Okay, I think I understand it.
Okay, yeah. I don't have any questions.
No, I don't have any questions.
Okay. Great, well, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Close the hearing.
This is a continuation of the April 14th, 2020 hearings of the Clark County Board of Equalization. The hearing before us involves property 164, 294-002 for case 783. Board members present by teleconference today are Lisa Bodner, John Marks, and Chairman Daniel Weaver. There's no one on the call from the assessor's office, but we do have Christopher Allen Kehoe on the line for the appellant. Chris, if you would please raise your right hand to be sworn in.
Okay. Do you swear or affirm the testimony you give in this hearing will be the truth under penalty for perjury?
Absolutely.
Just to let you know, we're independent from the assessor's office. We're here to hear testimony and make a decision on the value of your property as of January 1st, 2019. Keep in mind the assessor has the presumption of correctness. You have to overcome that to prevail. Within 30 days after this hearing, you'll get a written response from this court as the outcome. You have 30 days from that point to appeal to the state. The assessor has that same 30 days to appeal if he doesn't like our decision. Please keep in mind that during these unusual circumstances, we may be later than 30 days, but you'll still have 30 days to appeal to the state after you receive it. So unless you have questions, I'm going to turn it over to you and let you further explain your appeal.
Okay, thank you. Well, as I mentioned in my appeal form, I provided four similar sales, similar sales. The most notable one I would say would be the one at address 17410 Northeast Edmond. My house is a 1908 house, and this was a 1909 house. So very, very similar. That house is 50% larger with an additional bedroom and sold for $395,000. So that in combination with the three other similar appraisals and the appraisal that I got in 2015, I am valuing my house at $375,000.
And these houses are in your similar neighborhood, Northeast 34.
Oh, yeah. The I live on 39th Street. That house 17410 is just maybe two or three blocks down on 39th Street on the other side of 164.
I don't have any details on your house. Let's just something here. You said the back two stages of your appraisal. So
I had the what?
The appraisal I got from your appraisal is just the back two stages of it. Let's see if I'm missing something here.
Well, just to give you a thumbnail, it's a two-story house, 2,332 square feet. Built.
Yeah, I see it down here.
It's built in 1908, and effective year is 1990, so your house has been upgraded.
It was built 1908 originally. It was moved in the 70s. It was expanded, and it's currently a four-bedroom house with three bathrooms and about, I think, 2,300 square feet. So the comparable that I provided is larger than the current version of my house.
But your current version is 2,332 square feet?
Correct.
Okay. So you don't really think it's gone up in value since 2015?
Based on the comparables that I found in my area, the four that I provided, I don't think it has gone up to $559,000. In fact, it seems like it's around this $375,000 to $380,000 range based on all the sales in my neighborhood.
Okay. So you have a garage with a living area above it?
Yes.
A detached garage, I assume, at like 1137 square feet?
Yes.
And, okay. And then it also has a, you also have a carport like 480 square feet. No.
Yes.
Okay.
And that's a separate building?
The carport is just four poles with a roof on it, and it's just a place to park your car under.
No, but I mean the garage is a separate building.
Oh, yeah, that's a separate building, yeah.
And that is that area over the garage, I missed that, I'm sorry. Is that livable space?
Yes.
Okay. And your house was remodeled or updated supposedly about 1990?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, and so even though they were both that one and your comparable were built at about the same time, they were both evidently updated about the same time too, although the other one is considerably larger.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
If you add the other space on your... You're almost identical in size.
Right, and they also have a two-car garage with an attic, so it's a perfect comparison.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because there's, what, your 2,337 is your main house, and then 1,139 gives you 3,476 versus this
right.
For 3,548.
Right, and they sold for $395,000. So maybe I underestimated a little bit, but I think it's a pretty good comparable.
Yeah. Okay, I don't have any other questions.
Great.
No, I'm okay.
Okay, well, thank you all for your time.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Have a good day.
Thanks. Close the hearing.